1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
This week, we're going to feature Ray Milton Dolby, who was, the inventor of Dolby Sound. Now, today we're going to feature the man that started Bose Acoustics, Amar Bose. Really a great man. He's done so many things. I want to feature him. And in honor of that, I'm wearing my Bose noise cancellation earphones for the show.
Which means he can't hear a thing I say.
No, I can't.
Unless we're on the air.
Unless we're on the air. I can't hear anything.
Nope.
Everything is blocked out. It reminds me, 25 years ago, I wanted a set of Bose speakers. You know, the ones that have the speakers on the back. They have eight small speakers that reflect against the wall and one speaker forward-looking. So there are nine small speakers. There are nine in this particular Bose unit. And these, then, for a pair of them, was $600. This was 25 or 30 years ago.
That was a fortune.
So I built my own.
I think I've heard this story before, but it's worth retelling.
Yeah, so I built my own. Yeah, I'll have to retell it because of this, who we're commemorating today. So this was, of course, Amer Bose was associated with MIT. So naturally, the MIT kids wouldn't want to spend $600 for speakers. So they actually came up with plans. They actually had the circuit diagram and the circuit board for the Bose nonlinear amplifier, which we got a copy of, like the 15th Xerox copy of it. So we built the nonlinear amplifier, and then we cut all the boards, put mahogany veneer on it. We bought the exact speakers that Bose used, and it's basically, these are 8-ohm speakers, and you hook them up three in parallel, three in series. You got a 3x3, so the final result is also 8 ohms.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just wired the thing up, and then you stuff it full of insulation, and these things just work great.
So you did this at home. His pair, were they 600 a piece or 600 for the pair?
I can't remember.
Did it cost you materials to do this?
I don't know. But it wasn't
$600.
No, because the circuit board was almost free. I mean, because you just attach it and make it, and so I think maybe the components might have been $30,
and then I got
the wood. Probably another $20. I mean, I probably spent $100.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think I really spent that much money, and I had quite a bit of fun doing it.
Sure.
And now my son has them.
Still live. Wow.
Oh yeah, they still live. He's got them down in Richmond.
How big are these things?
They are about 4 feet wide and about 2 feet tall, and they've got this angle back. Where they got four speakers, and so the back is basically two angled boards that are angled out at about 30 degrees.
Sure.
So you got four speakers on one side, four on the other. And it was actually a fun. I learned a lot about how speakers work and a lot about Bose speakers at the time. Now, if I would want one, I think I would just buy it.
Well, you're, I think, in a position now where you could afford that.
And of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Tremendously big.
There's a letter in your mailbox, there.
Mr. Big Voice. Did you help? He's not going to.
He's looking at you with that cockeyed look.
I'm going to have to go to the gym because it's getting bigger and bigger.
No, I think
every
you
week.
Need to go to the union is what you need to do.
Yeah, man, the union might be it. We got an email from Arnie McKechnie. Arnie has been a while since he's written the show. He's from Davisonville, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Dr. Schertz. Your comments about education last Saturday's Tech Talk was right on, but I think Einstein said it a little differently. You know, I was saying the real value of education is what you know after you've forgotten what you memorized. The quote that he had from Einstein is this: education is what remains after you've forgotten everything that you've learned in school. I mean, Einstein was really quite, he's sort of a self-taught guy. Now, he says, a friend of ours has children, 12, 7, and 4, and they told me that spelling, grammar, and cursive writing are no longer taught in schools because the feeling is that word has spell check and grammar check. I'm thinking that's a bad idea.
Uh-huh.
And cursive isn't needed because computers, well, they do all the printing. He said, I hope it's not the same as Stratford. Well, actually, by the time the kids come to Stratford, they already know their math and they already know how to write, so we don't worry about that. He suggests Ray Dolby, who died recently, is an interesting guy to spotlight on Tech Talk. Ray would be an interesting guy. Of course, he's the Dolby sound system. He'd be an interesting guy. My question for Tech Talk this week, we finally get to the question from Arnie, is what does it make a difference if one has HDMI 2.0 cable versus a 1.2 cable from an earlier, you know, an earlier model cable? It doesn't look like there's a change in the connection. Really enjoy the show, Arnie McKechnick. Well, each new version of HDMI has faster data rates to support higher resolution. You know, HDMI is like a video transfer cable, which includes sound. Now, the main problem with any cable system, of course, is attenuation at higher frequencies. So if the cable is short, say less than 5 meters, you could probably use an HDMI 1.2 cable for a newer version of HDMI. And since it's short enough, the attenuation is not going to kill you. But I wouldn't run a long cable, say, to the next room. I think the attenuation would be too bad then. What they do is they go to higher and higher frequencies, they have to be more careful on how they twist the wire pairs. They have to be more accurate. And so they have to be much, much more accurate on how they twist the wire pairs, how they do the impedance matching at the end. And so they're just built to higher standards than the lower frequency cable. But it shouldn't be a problem. And it is true that there are a number of connectors on HDMI. And so they've got connector A and B. Those were the first ones. Most of your HDMI connections have A or B. There's a C connector, which is in the standard. This was hardly ever used. And there's then there's a D and an E, which is like a mini thing for like going in either for automotive use or for mobile devices. It sounds like you've either got an A or B cable, so you don't have a cable issue. But I don't think that's going to be a problem for you using an older cable, as long as the connector works. We got an email from Robert Taylor in Amarillo, Texas.
Another frequent guy.
Yeah. Hi, Doc. I haven't written for a while, but still thoroughly enjoy your show. I'm glad you're still on the radio and have taught me a lot over the last several years. Thanks. I see David Byrd is still drinking the apple Kool-Aid. And while I still love my Windows, I can no longer take the battery out. I have a Nokia Lumina 928, and it's a fantastic phone. Jim Rush should try this one out before he's forever doomed to use an iPhone.
I'm well beyond that, Robert, because we were just swapping Apple gear around here.
That's right. I do have a question. I'm getting my mother an Android Galaxy Note 3 due to a larger screen size. She has several things on her calendar that she likes to have synced up with her Galaxy Note when she gets used to it. She has Windows 7 on her desktop and an Outlook 2003. Is there a way to sync the two calendars? I sync mine from work using Microsoft Exchange, but she doesn't have access to that. From doing research on the internet, I think it's possible. I can't figure out how she does it. She does have a Microsoft Live account and an email account for Outlook.com. Thanks for any information, and keep the information rolling. Chief Robert Taylor from the Amarillo, Texas Police Department.
Oh, that's right. He's law enforcement. I'm going to go switch immediately to a Samsung before I get arrested.
You know, I got a speeding ticket last week. I was driving to our new Virginia Beach campus.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't know.
You have to be careful.
I've got to be very careful. He cut it down so I was below 80.
Because were you when this happened?
I was between Newport News and Virginia Beach.
On 64?
Yeah, I was almost there. But you see, if you're over 80, it's automatically reckless driving.
What are you doing over 80 miles an hour?
I know you're a busy guy.
Well,
I was only 81. I thought I was 79. Doc. I think it was a calibration issue.
Okay, all right. Please be careful.
But he cut me down. But I haven't had a ticket for a long time. That's a whole other story. Maybe I need some advice from Robert Taylor down at Amarillo.
You might.
Well, first of all, it is easy to do this, Robert. You need to install Google Calendar Sync, which automatically syncs your Outlook calendar entries to your Google Calendar. So they've got it already worked out. But you have to download it. This software allows you to sync the calendar entries either from Outlook or to Google or vice versa or both ways. Any changes made in one program automatically is reflected in the other. So that's the nice thing. She makes a change in her phone, it's going to automatically show up in Outlook. It's going to go back and forth. It's a two-way data exchange. Now, in your Samsung Galaxy S3, go to Settings and then go to Accounts plus Sync. Then you want to add the account. And then go to Add Account and then Google and then enter your details. And when it's done, make sure to check the Sync Calendar option. So it should be relatively easy to do, and that was a good question.
Yes.
We got an email from Kevin in Alexandria. Dear Doc and Jim, I have a router which connects to both my desktop PC and several wireless devices. You know, I got a tablet, a laptop, and so forth. Now, whenever I turn on the desktop, my laptops and my tablets... almost, their internet connection just slows down to a crawl. But when they're hooked up to the internet alone without the laptop, without the desktop on, the internet runs fine. How do I fix this? Thanks, Kevin. Well, Kevin, sounds like your desktop computer simply hogging all the internet bandwidth. Now, there are several reasons why this could be happening. The desktop computer may be trying to upload or download something. Like it could be a very large file, or it might be trying to upload several things. My son's computer did this when he was downloading music over his peer-to-peer software like Kazaa or BitTorrent or LimeWire. I'm certain it was always legal software.
Of course.
I'm certain.
Right.
But he could be downloading like 20 songs at the same time. And the way this peer-to-peer software works, you're also uploading. You'd be uploading 20 songs, and it just totally saturated the bandwidth. So I'd have to log on to my router, and I would simply, if I need to get access, if he wasn't home, I'd simply cut him off. I'd simply cut off his MAC address, and he was off the network until I let him back on again. Because he would let this download go on, and he would go out to dinner, and he'd say, Dad, I got something really important going on. Do not turn off my computer. And, of course, all the bandwidth was just eaten up. So I have lived with this. Now, there could also be, other things, like your desktop could be downloading updates, for instance. And then it'll speed back up to normal when they're all downloaded. So... Now, probably the most troubling thing, you could have malware, because this malware sometimes will take over your computer and starts uploading and downloading stuff. It could be sending out emails and doing all kinds of stuff. So those are possible things you could do. Now, I would check to see what the computer's actually doing. I'd check the process monitor on your Windows 7 machine. You can download Process Monitor from Microsoft. It's part of the SysInternals suite of tools. It's a very nice, and you can play around. You can see what's going on inside your computer. So you have to go to, so you can download it from Microsoft. And they've got a lot, SysInternals actually has a lot of tools that they do. See, Microsoft bought SysInternals, and they just brought all of their suite of tools and made it part of Microsoft. It's a good question, and it's a frequent problem at home.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you see, at work we solve this problem by doing bandwidth tailoring. We can control it so that one computer can't get more than a certain amount of bandwidth, and we can control this. But the routers that you have at home don't have that sophistication, that level of sophistication, so you really can't do that. We got an email from Feroz in Fredericksburg. Dear Tech Talk, I've got a Nikon digital single lens reflex, and I'd like to get the right memory card. So I've been going there looking at memory cards. You know, there are some slow ones that are just dirt cheap, and they really look attractive because of the price. And the fastest ones are really expensive. How do I make the correct choice? Thanks, Feroz in Fredericksburg. Well, for us, all memory cards have both size and speed specifications. The faster the card, the more expensive. Memory prices are dropping fast, and both speed and size are growing each year. Now, here, there are four classes of speed. Like class 2 is 2 megabits per second. And that's if you got SD video, for instance, or just maybe some relatively small pictures. That is the slowest of them, and that's actually dirt cheap. I'd certainly not recommend it. Class 4 is 4 megabits per second. That's for some videos, also for stills. Class 6 is 6 megabits per second for high-definition video and high-definition stills. Class 10 is 10 megabits per second. That would be for 1080 high-definition video or burst shooting mode. Now, they've come out with this super high speed when ultra high speed one And I don't know if the standard's fully fixed, but when I looked at Ultra High Speed Standard 1, it looked like they were running at about 50 megabits per second, and that would be for real-time broadcast or for very large high-definition video files. So the speed that you need depends on your application. Since both Class 2 and Class 4 are cheap, I never get a Class 2 because a Class 4 is almost the same price. And given the fact that prices are falling and that your camera supports HD video in burst mode, I'd say you ought to get a 10 at least.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got the burst mode, and if you're going to take burst photos, you really need it. Because the faster the memory card, the faster the camera can dump the picture into memory, and it only has so much of a buffer. So you really need a fast card if you want to do a burst. So I'd say get Class 10 and I think you'll be just perfectly fine. I don't know whether your camera is going to support the ultra high speed one, because now we're going so fast it may not be able to offload the data any faster than that. But that's a good question, and
yes,
it's a little confusing because, you know, you go to the store frequently, the guys there don't know much about anything to give you any really solid information.
No, they don't.
We got an email from Amber in Fairfax. Dear Tech Talk, I'm confused about all the browsers that are available. What's the difference, and what do you recommend? Thanks, Amber from Fairfax. Well, actually, Amber, I have 5 browsers on my machine. So
you're like the browser clearinghouse.
Yeah, so, you know, so I have a certain degree of indecision. Actually, I have a reason for it. I'm running Internet Explorer. I have Chrome. I have Firefox. I have Opera. And I have Safari. Now, see, I like to look at the Stratford website and all of our web-based stuff with all the different browsers to see whether there's a difference in how it looks, and that affects some of our web development stuff. So I have them all. Now, Chrome by Google has really gotten the best reviews in terms of speed and security. A close second in terms of reviews has been Firefox. But in recent years, Microsoft has really made great strides in Internet Explorer. It used to be, you know, viewed as a dog by the tech community, but their latest version of Internet Explorer is not too bad. So it's really a close third in terms of the reviews. And then the last ones in terms of speed and are really Opera and Safari. They're much slower. As it turns out, Internet Explorer has over 50% of the installed base. Firefox and Chrome have around 16%. Safari has around 12%. But the Microsoft share has been constant for about the past 3 years, around 50%. So it looks like we sort of stabilized out here. And I think they were declining quite rapidly until they did a real improvement. I think you're going to start seeing a shift toward Chrome and Safari as we move more and more to mobile devices, because of course Android devices like Chrome, because they're both made by Google, and Apple devices like Safari, because that's made because Safari is made by Apple, and so written by Apple, and so I think you're going to see a gradual uptick as mobile things go on, but you really are going to be fine with any of them. Some people feel as though you are more secure using Chrome than Internet Explorer, because that's the one that they always try to target. I don't know if that's actually true anymore, mm-hmm. but so it doesn't. It's not really too critical which one you use. Just make certain whichever one you pick of the top three, I'd pick either Internet Explorer, Chrome, or Firefox, that you always get the latest updates.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, Doc, that was a full mailbag.
It was a very full mailbag.
But we always need more mail, right?
Yes, we always. Oh, now that's when I'm dealing with a radio professional. This is called a segue. Yeah, this is a segue. Yeah, you know, listen, we love your email. So send us your email to techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll either get back to you by email or we'll cover your question on the air. And also, we are checking out the Tech Talk page on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/techtalkonline, and we'd love your comments during the show.
This is Tech Talk Radio, heard every Saturday on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and we will have more right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We're back in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Pro Balls in IT.
Excellent, Mr. Big Voice.
He's trying.
He's doing a very good job. Today we're going to feature Ray Milton Dolby. Ray Milton Dolby invented the Dolby Noise Reduction System. He also co-invented videotape recording while he was at Ampex. He is founder of Dolby Laboratories, and you've heard of course, Surround Sound. He was the inventor of Dolby Surround Sound. He was born January 18th, 1933 in Portland, Oregon. He was raised in San Francisco and graduated from Sequoia High School in 1951. Now, he was always interested in technology, and as a teenager, he held a part-time job and summer jobs at Ampex in Redwood City, working with their first audio tape recording development program. Now, while at San Jose and later at Stanford University, which was interrupted by a couple of years in Army service, he worked on early prototypes of the videotape recording technology, and he was actually listed as a co-inventor of the videotape recorder. He was a non-degree-holding consultant because he didn't have his bachelor's degree yet, and he played a key role in the effort that led to Ampex's unveiling of their prototype quadruplex videotape recorder in April 1956. Then in 1957, Ray Milton Dolby made his mother very happy when he graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from Stanford University. Then he won the Marshall Scholarship to the PhD program at the University of Cambridge. I mean, that's pretty impressive. That is impressive. And within the University of Cambridge, he went to Pembroke College. And he received his Ph.D., that's why I like him, in physics Pembroke College in 1961. Now, after Cambridge, he acted as a technical advisor to the United Nations in India until 1965. So he went to India for 4 years. But while he was at Cambridge, he began to notice, because he was like an audiophile, he began to notice this hissing noise on audio tapes. And, you know, if you're ever listening to some kind of music and then you get kind of a quiet section, there's kind of the hiss, you know, the background hiss of the tape. And this bothered him. And he was actually kept thinking about this thing while he was in India. And the solution came to him in his home while he had a home in Punjab, India. And while he was home in Punjab, the solution came to him. He was sitting at his desk making some calculations on distortions generated by some conventional noise reduction systems. And suddenly, like a flash, he realized that these problems would disappear if he separated the high levels of signal from the low levels of signal and amplified them differently. So this was like an inspiration that came in a flash. So when he returned to England in 1965, he founded Dolby Laboratories in London. In that same year, he officially invented the Dolby sound system, a form of an electronic filter, but he didn't file his U.S. patent until 1969. Now, prior to Dolby's invention, all of music had background noises. His was particularly noticeable during instrumental solos or quiet, silent passages. and he completely solved this problem. The filter was first used by Decca Records in the UK, and the first film that Dolby Sound used was A Clockwork Orange. A Clockwork Orange was the first film that used Dolby Sound. Dolby Laboratories grew to be an industry leader in audio technology, cutting background hiss and tape recordings, and later bringing out surround sound, which now we all know. Dolby moved to San Francisco in 1976, moved his whole company there. And in 1981, he was awarded an Oscar because actually he transformed the sound of the soundtrack of movies.
Sure.
He also received the Grammy Award in 1995 because of his work on soundtracks, and he received Emmy Awards in 1989 and 2005, so he really got into the whole Hollywood scene quite a bit. Dolby was a fellow and past president of the Audio Engineering Society. He died of leukemia on September 12, 2013, in his San Francisco home at age of 80. He was a member of the Forbes 400, the top 400 richest people in the U.S. He had an estimated net worth of $2.9 billion in 2008, but by 2009, that value had declined down to around $2.4 billion. So there you go, Ray Milton Dolby, Dr. Dolby. I didn't realize he had a PhD. It's really Dr. Dolby.
Dr. Dolby.
There you go. All you wanted to know about Dr. Dolby, the inventor of surround sound.
Pretty amazing. Now, you built speakers at some point, but that was based on the Bose.
I built the Bose 901 speakers, mm-hmm. Yes. They've got the one forward-facing speaker and then the eight rear-facing speakers. And so
Dolby sound on your speakers must sound pretty incredible.
It probably does. But Dolby, of course, has got it's used for stereo, and you've got the rear. You've got five speakers. You've mm-hmm. got two in the back, two in the front, and one in the middle. So you need more than just my two speakers for Dolby surround sound. But those would be an excellent component if I would combine it with the other three speakers.
Well, I think you need to get to work.
I know. I'm going to have to. Well, actually, I gave those speakers to my son,
uh-huh.
and now he's got them in his house.
Yeah, you'll never see them again.
I've moved on.
It's Saturday morning, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms and set your own pay. If you are ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management covers the skills to launch your business from writing a solid business plan to financing, branding, and marketing. Choose from our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. Contact us today at stratford.edu. Stratford University. It's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here.
And I would be that aforementioned guy right here. My name is Jim Ross. I'm the adjunct professor for messing things up and lowering academic standards on Tech Talk Radio. Just a few moments ago, we spoke of Ray Dolby in Profiles in IT. He, of course, the inventor of Dolby Sound. If you can tell me the first movie in which Dolby Sound was used, you'll win two tickets for fine dining at the Escoffier Stratford University on the campus in Falls Church or at Cafe Karim on the campus in Woodbridge, Virginia. If you're calling from east of Portland, Oregon, it's 877-936-9333. Of course, the number from west of San Francisco, California is 877-936-9333. Everybody else can call us on the wildcard line, 877-936-9333. The Pop Quiz from Tech Talk Radio.
So, Doc, We've just gotten a visitor. So what should we do here? Shall we talk to David for a minute while Andrew answers the phone?
Yeah, I think we should just do that. We're waiting for the pop quiz answer here.
We need to play the music first.
Yes. Don't step.
Oh yeah.
I walk in.
Hi folks, this is David Burke.
Don't step. Make it pop.
There we go. And David is getting down over there.
Yeah.
Because he's a hip kind of guy. Well, you're on four, right?
I don't think your mic's on yet.
I don't think it's on yet.
Oh, now it's
on. There we
go.
Doc, always good to see you.
Oh,
always good to see you. You've been shopping for clothes.
Oh, yeah. I'm dressed up this morning.
Yeah, exactly. You certainly are, sir. Always keeping in the trends. Yeah. It's fall and he's wearing shorts.
It's Hilfiger. What do
it
you
does,
want?
Listen,
I'm wearing shorts.
It's not very hard to be trendy in a radio station.
Yeah, you're right about that.
It's a radio. Right. This is no, it's not radio. It's a classroom of the airwaves.
Yeah, classroom
That's
of
right.
the airwaves,
That's
yes.
Right. I took the, what is it, the invisible stairway up to the
you
galaxy.
You took the space elevator.
The space elevator.
It came down on the space elevator.
Yes. Yeah. Having a slow show, bring out the space elevator.
There you go.
Right, you know. It's always there because it'll never be developed. It's always in development.
Okay, let me cut to the quick here because
okay,
I know
good.
You guys got a lot of stuff to get to.
We have tons.
And I'm double.
And you're double parked too.
I'm double parked.
Yeah.
The iPhone. What is the difference between now the new iPhone 5C? What is this 5? What?
The 5C and the 5S.
The 5C stands for cheap, right?
So yeah, the cheap. Thank you.
That's what.
Do
what
I get the tip in on that?
It's cheap, so if you can't afford an iPhone, that's what you're going to get. The 5C.
But it's only $100 cheaper. It's not that much cheaper.
Right. So
and
what aren't you getting with that one that you're getting with?
You're not getting the 60. You do not get the 64-bit operating system, and you get a plastic case.
Right, plastic case.
Oh, that's not
good. But people said the plastic case feels almost like enamel. I mean, they said it really feels good.
Enamel.
Said,
okay.
Like
your teeth, like or a bathtub.
It doesn't feel like a cheap plastic. It got pretty good reviews.
That's good.
You
that's
like that?
Good. That's very good.
But
thank
so
you.
The idea is that they've actually forked the iPhone product line, and so people are thinking that the 5C is probably going to drop in price to maybe $250 or $300 for China, and for these other countries.
For China.
How about us? Well, they want us to buy the 5S, the expensive one.
Of course.
They're doing the cheap one for the developing
for the Chinese kids.
For the Chinese kids and also in India. And they've got
Excuse
all
me,
the,
don't they have all our debt?
They do.
Why do they need a cheap phone?
Well, that's it. But only the government has our debt. You know, like the workers don't have our money.
Okay. One other quick question. I asked you this off the air a while back, but somebody may be in the same spot I am. I went to the 5, but I have all these photos on my phone that I don't have on the hard drive. And I can just tell the folks what you told me to do, because I did exactly what you said not to do.
So what you want to do is, because you've already synced...
Oh, he's getting serious. He's putting his watch
on.
So what you've done, you've already synced up your new phone to your iTunes account.
You are correct.
And it only allows you to sync up with one device. So if you plug your old phone back into the computer, don't really sync it to iTunes. Close iTunes. And then go to My Computer, and then go to an external hard drive. It'll look like an extra external hard drive because you've got this little memory chip
and
in
click
there.
Click that.
Click on that and open it, and there will be a subdirectory with all your pictures, and just copy them right over. Okay. It's just like you're copying them right off of a hard drive.
I love that.
So it's very simple. Now the nice thing about I'm thinking of getting the 5C.
Oh really?
The expensive one.
So you can go overseas.
Are you 5S?
So you use it overseas.
Oh yeah, the 5S. Yeah.
Oh okay.
Oh, it's 5 shirts. That's
what it is.
That's right.
Wow, there's a reach.
I'm getting that.
There's a reach.
Some people think
they were thinking that over in
some people think it's really for
what
5.
What should we call
S
this?
Stands for Steve. Some people think it stands for Steve. Yeah. It's probably a better.
What does the C stand for? Do you know?
Yeah, cheap.
It's probably
really? You hit it around the head. Cheap.
No, it says for China because that's where it's made.
Is that what the deal
is? That's where it's made. They're all made in China.
Yeah, they are.
So finally, China got their own name.
Wait for the Pakistani version.
That's right.
5P.
So the thing is, the 5C has a bigger battery, so you got a 10-hour battery life, which is what I want because you know battery life is kind of an issue.
It is a big issue.
Then it's also got a 64-bit processor, so it's extremely high-speed processor.
Nice.
So it's got all kinds of special features built into the camera. Like what it does, if you put it on a multi-shot mode, you know sometimes you move your camera a little
bit? Sure.
It will take three or four pictures and pick the best one and just save it.
Wow.
And then what it does, and then suppose that, so the Pixelmator, you'd moved it the least, but suppose in one of the pictures, like the one you saved, the person was moving their head, so their face is a little bit out of focus because they moved it. If their face is in focus in one of the other four, it will paste it in.
Hey, take that, Annie Leibovitz.
And it will automatically.
Who needs an SLR?
So, so it will automatically do this stuff. It also, have you ever noticed when you take a picture, sometimes it's like a bright background and you have trouble getting this, getting the full dynamic range?
Right.
Now it actually will adjust and do processing to give you, to spread the dynamic range of your pictures.
Look at his face. And it's like a 12-year-old at Christmas.
And they do all that because of the 64-bit processor.
Very nicely done.
And then finally what it has, it's got a thumbprint. So
what's the thumbprint all about?
You just put your finger on, the thing and it will unlock it. Can't we
download that to put on our old phone?
No, because there's no thumbprint detector. There's no sensor. There are issues with.
So if somebody steals your phone, it's worthless.
It's worthless
to them.
Your
thumb doesn't match unless they cut your thumb off and put it in a Ziploc
bag. Doesn't work.
Good thinking, David.
Actually,
way to give people ideas.
Actually, it turned out that. That Apple
a lot
did
of
it.
Spy books.
Man. No.
Give me your phone and your thumb.
Here's the deal: if somebody cuts off your thumb, it doesn't work. They actually can detect that.
They can detect a dead thumb.
That was actually one of the things.
You're kidding me.
That was actually one of the things. You rejected.
What did they consult the mafia
thumb.
When they built this?
Wow,
phone?
Wow, man.
That's but here stuff. Is. Here is the problem.
Here we go.
So room temperature.
Here's the problem. Here is the problem. I was going to cover this a little bit later in the show. There's a news item called sleep hacking. See, so now.
Here we go.
So here's the deal. So now you've got your phone all locked up.
Yeah, right.
Maybe you don't want your significant other to know all the stuff on your phone. Yeah. And while you're asleep, you're. Significant other can put your thumb on your thumb on your thumb and open up your phone.
This shows trust.
So this is a new term called sleep hacking.
I hope Mrs. Bobbitt's not listening.
This is a sleep hack.
Thumb.
So
thumb.
Now,
oh, I'm sorry.
Or else you're at a fraternity party and you pass out. So your buddies, take your phone and they
send text off your phone.
And they make post to your Facebook account. So it can't detect whether you're unconscious or sleeping. It can only detect if you're not alive.
If you don't have thumbs, could you use your big toe?
Wow.
You could use anything.
You see how highbrow this show has gotten?
And we have gone right into the gutter.
Whatever you save,
you're kidding me.
No, it doesn't have to be a finger. It's just that fingers have the most features.
It has to be the same.
It has to be the same
appendage.
Item. Whatever you do.
Oh boy.
The look on David Byrne's face.
No, I'm not going there.
I'm not going there either.
No, we're not going there. Jim, are we going there?
No, we're not going there.
So the thing is, it's however you set it up when you initially save
whatever
it.
Whatever appendage you use, that's what you're going to have to
use. Right.
So now, remember your appendage.
So now this is the new word, sleep hacking. Sleep hacking. I was going to cover that later in the show, but it just seemed to fit in. So this is...
That's crazy.
If somebody took my hand while I was sleeping and put it on an iPhone, I think it might wake me up.
I bet it wouldn't.
I don't think so?
Hey, remember were you in the service? We used to take guys' hands, put it in a bucket of water, and they'd, kind of like over themselves.
Yeah.
I think this sleep hacking could be a good talk, a good topic for the bird minute that you have occasionally.
Yeah, the bird minute.
Wow. Sleep
Let's
hacking.
Have a bird moment.
Sleep hacking.
Sleep hacking. You need to come upstairs. I need to talk to you.
Yeah, okay.
Sleep hacking.
Yeah.
That's good. We'll stay away from the appendage thing.
We're going to stay away from that entirely.
The 5C with its porcelain veneer is basically the same guts as the 5, right?
It's the China version. 5C.
Well, it doesn't have the fast processor. It doesn't have the 64-bit processor.
No. That's why you can get
it's
not $30. It's still $500, isn't it?
Yeah, it's $100 cheaper. That's it. It's 20% cheaper.
Can I just change the whole gears because I have to leave, but I have to ask you this question because as a normal person who listens to Tech Talk.
Okay. Uh-huh.
What the heck is it with Google Glasses? What is that?
That's insane.
What is this?
I don't know.
What are Google Glasses? Now, Doc, can you explain that without having a whole college dissertation?
What space elevator?
Why do I care?
Here's the thing with Google Glass. I think there would be other implementations that work better. No, it is having contextual information at the moment.
So you could be looking at, you could be walking down the street, and it has
Google glasses on.
It has face recognition, and it whispers in your ear. This is David Byrne approaching, and then you could speak to it. You say, I want to go someplace, and it will give you turn by turn directions. It's got that
fighter pilot display on the cockpit on his canopy.
It does.
On your glasses.
Who needs that?
What is that all about?
And you can talk to it. I think wearable computers ultimately are going to be integrated into our lives.
I'm sure.
But I think the Google Glass is a little quirky. You're shaking your head and all that quirky stuff. I don't think that's the right interface.
And you really can't see through people's clothes, that kind of
thing? No, you can't.
David has no use for it.
Excuse me. I'm just asking the questions that normal people would ask, even though it sounds totally ridiculous.
Okay.
Even though I don't care.
He winks.
So they're talking about having a little lapel pin.
Oh.
Which would be like a camera,
right.
And you could talk to it, so you wouldn't even notice it, and you'll get contextual information as you're walking around just through
We got
actually
people.
Wearable computers. I think we're going to get used to it.
They're here.
They're coming. And we already look at this. We already use Google. You need information. You're always looking stuff up. So eventually, you won't even carry a cell phone around.
Jim's looking at the clock. We okay, man? Are you okay with that?
We've got some things to do.
I'm gonna feature next week on
Straight
the show.
Straight Theory's next day.
You can.
Uh oh, I think I need to leave.
Yeah, now. You better. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about wormholes.
I'm leaving now.
We're not
going to
talk about wormholes.
No. When you go to the wormholes, it's time to
We've
leave.
We've talked appendages and thumbs.
I'm going to cover software that you can get for free. And you can hook your phone into your computer, and it will read all the data right out on an iPhone, including all the stuff that you think you've erased.
Ooh. Okay. Well, that's a good.
So I'm gonna cover that next week. This is sort of an extension of the sleep hacking.
I love that.
So you'll need to come back, David.
Do I have exit music or just intro?
No, just intro music.
Okay. Well, I'll just
we kind of leave it open ended.
Bye bye.
Bye bye, David. Bye-bye. Nice seeing you.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, heard in the Washington area over the broadcast airwaves on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, on the internet worldwide at Tech Talk Online. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms and set your own pay. If you are ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management covers the skills to launch your business from writing a solid business plan to financing, branding, and marketing. Choose from our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. Contact us today at stratford.edu. Stratford University. It's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for...
Profiles in IT
to be discussing Amar Gopal Bose, B-O-S-E. Amar Gopal Bose was founder and chairman of the Bose Corporation, a company known for innovative audio products. Bose's research on psychoacoustics, or sound perception, revolutionized the speaker industry. I'll explain that a little bit later.
Okay.
Psychoacoustics.
Mm-hmm.
Bose was born November 2nd, 1929, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. His father was from India. His mother was from America. His father was an Indian freedom fighter who fled Calcutta in the 1920s. They were fighting against the British, mm-hmm. trying to get independence from the Brits.
During World War II years, he hired a few of his close friends as co-workers, and in his small home, he set up a business repairing model trains and home radios to supplement the family income. He was already kind of an entrepreneurial guy in his early teens. After graduating from Abington Senior High School in Abington, Pennsylvania, Bose enrolled in MIT, at MIT, and he graduated with a BS in electrical engineering in 1951. Bose spent a year at Eindhoven, Netherlands, in the research labs of N.V. Phillips Electronics, and he spent a second year as a Fulbright research student in New Delhi, India, going back to his ancestral roots. He completed his Ph.D. in electrical engineering from MIT in 1956, writing a thesis on nonlinear systems. Following graduation, Bose became an assistant professor at MIT, and he actually continued teaching at MIT until 2001. When he first started teaching, he bought a high-end stereo system that had really the greatest of specs. This was in 1956, right after he hit the money, got his assistant professorship job, got his Ph.D., said, okay, I'm going to buy those speakers. He set them up, and he was disappointed that they just did not sound like a live performance. Mm-hmm. So his research on acoustics led him to invent a stereo loudspeaker that would reproduce in the home the dominantly reflected sound field that characterizes the listening space of an audience in a concert hall. His focus on psychoacoustics became the hallmark of his company's audio products. So before Bose, the idea for speakers was to have a linear reproduction of exactly the audio track that was on the record. Everything was linear. You wanted to have an absolutely linear amplifier. You wanted to have your speakers reproduce exactly, or as close as you could, that audio track. Well, the problem is that did not lead to sound like you'd get it in the concert hall, because in the concert hall, the sound bounces off the walls and very little of the sound actually reaches you directly. Moreover, the concert hall absorbs the sound. And so what you finally hear is not a linear rendition of the sound, but the sound as it's been modulated by the concert hall. And so he said it's not so important to have the sound be exact linear reproduction of the record. What is important that you want to reproduce the exact sound that someone receives when they're sitting in a concert hall. Mm-hmm. So this is psychoacoustics. The how you can psychologically
you're tricking the mind into thinking that you're there, right?
Yeah, and so the Bose speakers that I made, because I didn't want to spend $600, they had 9 8-inch small speakers that had huge magnets, and there were 8 of them projected against the wall. So and they were at about a 30-degree angle, so I had 4 in one direction, 4 in the other direction. So the sound from the 8 on the backside bounced off the back wall. So I had to put my speaker about a foot or two from a flat surface, and the sound would bounce off the wall.
I was just about to ask, so positioning it against the wall properly is key into making it work.
You don't want to put it in the corner of the room. You want to have a flat surface. Mm-hmm. And then you could just imagine how the sound would bounce from that. And then there was 8 were backward facing, 1 was forward facing, so you had a total of 9. And then, in order to compensate for the fact that the room changes and modulates it, he had a nonlinear amplifier, and he tuned it up in a way that would reproduce the way that the sound would be when you received it. So, for instance, I mean, we had these small speakers, and so as you would expect, you have to really boost the bass.
Sure.
So that nonlinear speaker in the lower frequencies just really had higher gain, and at the high frequencies had lower gain. And so he basically tuned this particular speaker or this amplifier to match the features in the room. He tuned the system to the room. And in so doing, he was able to achieve a sound that sounded like you close your eyes and you can imagine that you were in the concert hall. And so this was really revolutionary. It was a tremendous idea, and it really did work. He basically, after he invented this, one of his advisors was Dr. Y.W. Lee,
mm-hmm.
and he advised him, he said, why don't you start a company? And so he turned to angel investors, and Dr. Lee was one of the angel investors, and there were others, and he got seed money, and he started Bose Electronics. Dr. Lee was his MIT thesis advisor, by the way. Now, Bose was awarded two significant patents in two fields that continue to be an important part of the Bose combinations. The patents were in the areas of loudspeaker design and in nonlinear two-state modulated Class D power processing. That, of course, that patent would have covered the circuit board that we built ourselves with this bootleg circuit design. But we weren't selling it, so it really wasn't a patent violation, I don't think.
No, you're using it for your own.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Unless you're selling tickets for people to come over and listen to Jimi Hendrix in your...
I'll have to consult with my lawyer after the show to see if there's any problem there.
Sure.
Now, the company, the Bose, now it employs 9,000 people worldwide, and it has products for the home, the car, as well as for professional audio. You've got Bose audio systems in your car.
Mm-hmm.
Bose, of course, I'm wearing these noise cancellation headset. You're going to have to upgrade your headset, Jim.
It's
pathetic. It is.
It looks like I'm wearing kitchen sponges, doesn't it?
You don't look like a radio professional with that headset.
Those are fighting words.
Yeah, I know. They look like little yellow earmuffs.
These are Sennheisers, my friend. These are state of the art.
Okay. Now, then what we're going to do, then he also did this sort of this phased array acoustic where you get this linear line of sort of this, it's a long thin speaker, and it basically uses noise cancellation to direct the direction of the audio. So you think it's coming from the right side, but actually this phased array is just adjusting the phase of the acoustics to make you think that you've got speakers in different parts of the room. It actually is quite impressive. And so when they demonstrate this particular thing, you go to the Bose store, they'll have on the wall something that looks like a speaker with a black cloth over it,
mm-hmm.
and they'll turn it on, and you look at it, and you think sound is coming out of this speaker with the black cloth on it. So after you listen to the entire demonstration, they pull the cloth, and it turns out it's just a shelf. There's nothing there.
Huh.
And that was all done with just controlling the phase and they do constructive and destructive interference like a phased array in order to adjust the direction of the acoustic wave.
So does this work, particularly with the speakers that are in line, and you have all these little speakers in line, do you achieve the effect because of where the sound waves cross, you create a null? Is that what happens?
It's like interference. So when the sound comes to you because of the interference pattern,
mm-hmm.
Because there's a slight phase difference between the two ears, that's why you think it comes from the right or the left.
Basically,
so it's adjusting the phase the arrival time of the wave to trick you to think it's coming from one direction or the other.
So it's basically, I was going to say, it's tricking your mind.
That's
basically.
Right. And so this works very well for high and mid frequencies. It doesn't work for bass, but then a bass is not really that directional anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the high frequencies that directional.
So you have a separate speaker just for the bass.
That's right. And then, of course, they had the Bose radio. Now, have you ever looked inside of a Bose radio?
It's like a maze of channels in there, right?
What it does, it has a... It has an exponential horn on mm-hmm. the bass. And so, an exponential horn on the bass, what that does, that creates an absolute impedance match, so you get no reflections from the interface. So if you take an impedance-matched acoustic interface, you get no reflections. That would be equivalent to an anti-reflective coating on a lens.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get any reflection off the interface, and so you get very efficient coupling of the acoustic wave to the air. And so it sounds like a huge speaker, and you can actually feel wind blowing out of the front of that thing. But the exponential horn is so long that they have to wrap it around in this, and so it looks like it's snaked around all inside of the unit. But you notice it keeps getting wider and wider and wider mm-hmm. until it finally comes out. And so that was a revolutionary design, that Bose Wave radio.
Right.
So these were all items that he. Actually, I did buy that Bose radio. I didn't build it. So I've bought two Bose products in my life.
Ah,
and I built
one. So you have
one.
A Wave radio?
I have a Wave radio, and I've got these. I forgot about that. So I actually did buy two products, and I only bootlegged one.
Building a Bose Wave radio would be a little bit more involved.
That would have been really tough. Now, he never took his company public. It was privately held because he wanted to pursue risky long-term research. And, Bose worked on things like, absorbers, shock absorbers for the car. He had all kinds of projects that he was working on, and he just loved to work on this stuff. He didn't want to have a bunch of stockholders telling him he had to make money every quarter. So many people have called Bose Acoustics, the Apple for acoustics devices.
Interesting.
Because Apple just, Steve Jobs just worked on what he wanted to. He just wasn't focused on the profit of the next quarter. Now, in addition to running his company, Bose remained a professor at MIT until 2001.
Mm-hmm.
In 2007, he was listed on the Forbes 400 as the 271st richest man in the world with a net worth of $1.8 billion. He actually didn't care so much about money, to tell you the truth. In 2009, he was no longer on the billionaires list, but he returned to the list in 2011 with a net worth of $1 billion.
I guess he bought a few of his own Wave radios and knocked them down a little bit.
Maybe he got a sailboat or something. I don't know. In 2011, listen to this, Bose donated the majority of his company's shares as non-voting stock to MIT. Now, on the condition that they could never be sold. So MIT has no management. These are non-voting. They do not participate in the management of Bose. They can't sell the shares. But anytime Bose pays a dividend, MIT gets their percentage of the dividend.
That's nice.
And he did that because he felt that the education that he received at MIT and the support that he did at MIT really made a difference, and he wanted to continue to invest in education going forward. I mean, that's really quite amazing. He died July 12, 2012, at age 23 in Wayland, Massachusetts. So there you go. Amar Gopal Bose, the founder and chairman of the Bose Corporation, a company known for their innovative products.
Outside of electrical engineering, if somebody wanted to get into this kind of line of work, what sort of things would you recommend that they study? Mathematics, is that something to be important in this?
This was mathematics. He was actually this was electrical engineering.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, this probably would be a field within electrical engineering, mm-hmm. I would think.
Mm-hmm. Now, the speaker that you made, did you need two of these, or was it just one
two,
of these?
Two.
So you have one against the one flat wall. Would the other have to be against the opposing flat wall?
No. They're both against the flat wall in the front.
The same wall, okay.
In the front of the room.
Okay.
So they're both stationed, so I put them. I have a flat wall in the front of the room, and they're on either side of that front wall, and then, facing with the eight speakers facing toward the wall. And I'll tell you, they sounded quite good. I can't believe the show is over
so fast.
Well, listen, we love all your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. And if you ever give Stratford a call and want to go in there and check out their programs, make certain that you tell them that you heard about it on Tech Talk Radio.
And we'll see you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and Federal News Radio.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions.